tell me where you are at the moment in the room?
The uncle is saying, can you tell me where you are in the room?
On top of Janet.
On top of Janet.
Do you sleep on top of Janet?
Why do you sleep on top of Janet?
It's my bed.
We know you sleep on the bed.
We know you sleep on the bed.
Why can't Janet feel you?
Why can't Janet feel you?
I'm invisible.
I'm invisible.
You're invisible? Why are you invisible?
G-H-O-S-T.
Because I'm a G-H-O-S-T. If you can't spell, that means ghost. Right, used to tell terrible lies. But there we are. Now, we've got two more, then you can ask some questions. This is an extraordinary one because of the answer to it. I'll tell you as we're going along. The uncle's asking the questions. Did any friends go with you?
Yes, all of them.
Yes, all of them.
The dogs, 68 dogs.
All the dogs, 68 dogs. Why have you got 68 dogs?
So that they can protect me from you killing me.
So that they can protect me from you killing me.
Bite your head off.
And bite your head off.
How can we kill you, Bill?
How can we kill you, Bill?
You can shoot me off.
You can shoot me off.
How can we shoot you if we can't see you, Bill?
How can we shoot you if we can't see you?
By praying to God.
By praying to God.
Sorry, I didn't hear that, Bill.
By praying to God.
By praying to God. So, what you're saying is we could get rid of you by praying to God.
Yes.
Yes, he said. It wasn't true. It wasn't true. Right, and the last one. Now, the last one is... If you are really of a disposition, whatever that disposition may be, hold your seats. What happened here, an American magician came, I've forgotten his name now, I know he's dead now, so it doesn't matter, but I've forgotten his name. And he came, and he more or less said, well, I'm going to sort it all out. Fine, okay. He said, I want to take Janet upstairs. So... All right, what are you going to do? Never mind what I'm going to do. Take Janet upstairs, right? So he took Janet. People always come along and want to do things. And of course he was a magician, quite a well-known one. He went upstairs with her. And this is what ensued. Janet whistling, Mr. Gross. When he'd gone, I said to Janet, what the hell happened up there? She says, I don't know. She says, he's mad. I said, why do you say that? She said, he's mad. I said, well, what did he do? She said, well, he stood in front of me and he put his hands up like that and fire came from his fingers. Because old magician's trick, you know, they stick things in their fingernails. Fire came out of his fingers. I said, what was all that terrible row? She said, I don't know. That was the poltergeist getting very, very angry, in my opinion. Very angry indeed. And you heard her say that, she whistled, Mr. Gross, just at the end of it all. Make that what you will. Right, well, that's that. Now I think we've got time for a few questions.
Mr. Gross, could you tell us what happened to the family and how it damaged them in any way afterwards?
What happened to the question was, what happened to the family and were they damaged in any way, correct? Yes, right. It's a difficult question to answer because they were a very highly stressed family. When we got there, one of the main things we had to do was lower the stress situation because, after all, as well as being scientists and investigators, we're also social workers. Very, very, very important part of the work. And we're getting on all right, and they were beginning to understand what was going on, at least as far as anybody knows what's going on. And they were getting used to it. And as far as the actual activity itself goes, well, after a while, like all poltergeist activity, it starts to diminish. And within 18 months, it had gone altogether. But for 6 months, it was still there. Now, as far as the family themselves are concerned, what effect did they have on them? Well, I can tell you that today, the mother won't even discuss it or talk to anybody about it. The media are always bothering her. She won't have anything to do with it. Janet is married. She had 4 children, but unfortunately, one child, the eldest boy, died in an accident a couple of years ago. And she ran a nursery, so she was quite normal. The other girl, the eldest girl, she got married. The youngest boy still, though I said the 10-year-old at the time, he died at 14, unfortunately. And the youngest boy still lives with the mother. She still lives in the same house. How it affected them, I don't know. But the point is, they won't talk about the case at all, any of them, in any way, shape or form. I'm worried every week by somebody from the media saying, I want to interview the family, so on and so forth. Because don't forget, this is 26 years on. And they're still at it, the media, but they won't. That's all I can tell you about the family itself. But did it affect them in the long term? I honestly don't know. All I know is that they had an incredible experience like we had. What is the cause of it?
Do you believe it was a discarnate person acting through
Was it a discarnate person that caused it? It's a question of evidence. The evidence points to the fact, that it was a discarnate entity. The evidence definitely points, you heard for yourself. There's other evidence as well. The fact is that it told us about things we didn't know about, and then we found out they were true. Something was communicating. But don't forget, this is a very, very unusual case because we had the poltergeist voice. Why the communication came through the girl? If the girl was for some miraculous reason was been able to talk like that, which the, by the way, the voice specialist said that was not possible. If she was being able to talk, how did she know things that we didn't know and she didn't know beforehand? So yes, I would say that was a discarnate entity, a poltergeist. It claimed to be 8 of them. There were 8 of them. There was Fred and Bill and Zebedee and Ginger and some others. And when they were speaking through the girl, I used to be able to tell when they changed. The voice was the same, but the personality changed. One of them used to swear like a trooper. Oh, by the way, the poltergeist man, I won't mention his name, but he used to be a sailor, and he went blind later on. And of course, sailors do tend to swear, so it might have been him, for all we know. The son, who claimed the poltergeist was his father, said, well, that is not my father's voice, but the personality is very much like him. And does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much.
Right. Yes, we had mediums in. We had quite a few in. Now, I told you Janet went into serious trance situations. We had 2 Brazilian mediums came in, which Guy Playfair brought. Now, they couldn't speak English, but they spoke Portuguese, and Guy Playfair spoke Portuguese. And they said they asked to stay in the room with Janet for an hour, which they did. And from that day onwards, she never had another outbreak of what you saw. The voice continued, yes, everything else, but not the, she didn't have this terrible trance situation. So they must have done something. What they did, I haven't got a clue. They did something. No, the phenomena did not stop abruptly. In most poltergeist cases, and I've done hundreds of cases since then, I'll tell you, it very, very rarely stops abruptly. Occasionally you get something happening for a couple of days and then it stops. I'm not sure whether that's real poltergeist activity or not. It's difficult to differentiate. The particular activity that I'm interested in is PK activity. It doesn't seem to stop abruptly. At that time, I was doing the Enfield case. I was also doing another case with a couple with no children involved in their 30s where fires were breaking out all the time. And that was the time of the fireman's strike in 1977. And they turned up 6 times to this house. The fires kept on taking place on the bed. The fires didn't burn through it. They burnt the top cover, the top blanket, the top sheet, and underneath unmarked. The fireman said, it's impossible, can't happen. It did. And that didn't stop abruptly either. That also faded away. That's how they usually go.
Well, the Sonoma cases you've dealt with, never mind the how did it happen,
yeah.
Is there a common thread of why?
I'm sorry?
Is there a common thread of why poltergeist activity happens?
Well, I have a theory, and it's not only my theory, I might tell you, that stress is one of the biggest causes of PK activity, whatever you like to call it, poltergeist, whatever, PK activity. Because I can say that I don't think I've ever been to a case, although people said to me, oh yes, there have been cases, where there hasn't been a very strong element of stress. And I don't mean everyday type of stress, I mean real stress. Now this woman, just been divorced, she's got 3 children who are not normal, and 1 child that's bright. And the children hated the husband, the ex-husband. So what more stress can you have in a situation like that? And practically every case I've ever been to, I say, one of the first things I ask, I say, is there any stressful, you have to be careful how you do it, of course. Is there any particular stressful situation here? They immediately say, oh no, no, everything's all right. And after a half an hour's talking, you know that there's a very serious stress situation. It's either wife or money or husband or something, you know, usual thing. This lady here has been having her hand up all the time.
Then Dorothy second.
Mr. Gross, the red cushion episode, if we call it that, the one end.
Yes.
Why did the investigator feel that to leave the room rather than stay and see how.
I'm sorry, your accent's getting me a bit.
The red cushion episode, the one that ended up on the roof.
Yes.
Why did the investigator feel that to leave the room before something would happen like that?
Yeah.
Why did he stay and see what happened?
Right, a good question, yes. Why didn't he stay in the room when it happened? The reason being that she said, if you want me to do something, you've got to get out of the room. Well, we had to do what she said. But I'm glad you asked the question, because there's one important thing that happened 3 years later. I was asked to go to London University to have Janet tested on a test bed they had there, which was very, very sensitive test bed. It was so sensitive that the heartbeat would show an increase and decrease in weight, right? Professor Hastid asked me to come along. He was professor of physics there in Birkbeck College. And he said, I would like you to bring Janet along to give her a test on this test bed to see whether she could levitate. Because if she could levitate, whether she levitated or not, we should be able to see a reduction in weight. Now, he'd been doing this test with other people and hadn't gotten the results. He said, bring Janet along. Poltergeist victim. So I brought Janet along, eventually, and we put her on the test bed. She sat on the chair. We told her to move around so we could take a mean of the readings on her scales. And then said to Janet, Janet, sit perfectly still and try and levitate. Understand what I'm saying? Yeah, I understand what you're saying. She sat perfectly still. That was that. Suddenly, the pointer on the main dial went over to maximum, held it for 5 seconds, and then went back again for 5 seconds, then did it again for 5 seconds. It did it 3 times. When we analysed it, She hadn't lost weight. She gained 1 kilogram of weight in 3 5-second bursts. How? She didn't lose weight, she gained it. Typical poltergeist-type activity. What I said before, if you don't mind the expression, bloody-minded. That was in the laboratory. And that was the source of a paper, by the way.
Mr. Gross, do you think that which you have on the tapes is the ultimate proof of survival? Or have you been involved with any other kind of evidence?
I've been involved with lots of evidence. But you asked me about survival. Now we're on very tricky ground here. Very tricky ground indeed. I don't think I'm the right person to ask. I'll tell you the reason, because I'm not a great theorist. It's not fair for me to... You asked me my opinion. Just an opinion. I would say that everything pointed in that case to a survival situation. But whether it was something else that we don't understand, I don't know. But I'm telling you what it pointed to, a survival situation. God knows what sort of survival. The mind boggles.
Maurice, yeah. If in this society we were lucky enough to have a poltergeist case worth investigating...
Yeah.
26 years on from your own researches,
yes,
in the Enfield case, are there particular things that we should try and do as case investigators? For example, should we be rigging up cameras or environmental software or going for brainwaves, or shall we just all move across the Tesla chair and get her into a lab?
I'm smiling because it's a thing with me. A good video and a good tape recorder is all you need. All these other things we know. We know all the electrostatic things that might happen. Not they've got anything to do with it. We know it gets cold. We know it gets hot. We know people shiver. We know all that. But if you want facts, take yourself a good video and a good tape recorder, and you're home and dry if you get anything. That's my... That's it.
Morris, you mentioned to me earlier about burning banknotes. I don't know that story.
Burning what, sorry?
Burning banknotes, you said.
The burning banknotes were just one of those things that happened. The fires used to break out. Spontaneous fires used to break out. Now, that's strange, because I told you the other case I was on at the same time was all to do with fires. And the first time I went to this house with the fires, I came back the next day, and I'm sitting in the living room, and suddenly we smell smoke, and they think it's outside. And then realise suddenly the smoke's in the house. Jumped up, rushed into the kitchen. There's smoke coming out one of the drawers. Pulled the drawer open, everything inside the drawer is smoking, including 2 £1 notes. Right, that's where they came from. Explain that away.
Any more questions? Yes, one or two.
Maurice, you said that the girl's occasions fates. Some things that you found out later, what kind of things, what kind of activities did they fake, and how did you find out?
Well, we found out, first of all, we hadn't got a clue how he had died, right? But he said, 2 years before I died, I went blind and I had a hemorrhage and I fell asleep. And I died in a chair in the corner downstairs. When I met the son said that's exactly how he did die. He went blind before. Actually, we'd already found out he went blind, but we didn't know about exactly the manner of his death. And the son said that's exactly how he died. And there were other things. But of course, I must add, that a lot of the information he gave was absolute rubbish. I mean, he said to me one time, he said I was an Egyptian king or something or other. I said, that's very interesting. I said, when did you live? I said, when did you live? So he said, when he lived. I said, well, are you sure? And he said, F off. I mean, that's the sort of reply I used to get.
I'm sorry, Morris, I don't know, I thought you said earlier that there's a lot of occasions
with the girls. Sorry, there's... Oh, faking it. Oh, yes. Well, I'll give you one example of fake. Sorry, faking it. Oh, yeah, I'll give you one good example. We used to have these tape recorders, perhaps one upstairs or two upstairs and one down below, running all the time. So I left quite late the night before and came back in the morning, and Janet ran straight up to me. Mr. Gross, The tape recorder upstairs has gone, it's disappeared. I said, oh yes, Janet. She said, yes, it's gone. Said, all right, it's gone. Then I was thinking to myself, don't believe this. And I started to search around, and I found the tape recorder in the airing cupboard. What Janet didn't know was the tape recorder was running. And you hear Janet say, oh, let's pinch the tape recorder and hide it. So there you are. That's how she got caught once. Don't forget, children tend to copy what's going on. And it's quite normal. Yeah, we caught them once or twice.
Yes, in the photograph where the person appeared, it was 15% too big.
Yeah.
Did anyone else in the photograph recognise the person?
No. Nobody was recognised. There were some stories they told, because this took part in the Austrian Tyrol. And when they went back there, about 3 years later, I asked them to find out as much as possible about the history. And I was told that there was a story there about a woman who went out into the field with a sickle, threw it up into the air, and it never came down. Whether that was a ghost, but that ghost looks very modern to me. Very modern indeed. So I don't think that had anything to do with it. Manifestations, you mean ghosts, and you're talking about now apparitions. Well, there were apparitions. Mr. Burkham had one episode, and I have to take his word for this. The house was empty at the time because we'd sent the children away and the mother away on holiday because it was getting too much for them. And the house was empty at the time. And he was the uncle, he lived five doors down the road. He said he walked into the house, into the living room, looked into the kitchen, and there sitting at the table was a man sitting at the table dressed in a shirt with no collar. Now this is the old time, and he said he had his trousers tied round with string. Now what he's talking about is the old time navvy sitting at the table. And he said, I just shook my head, looked again, gone. And the other thing that happened is me. With me, I mean. I'm upstairs with Janet and the mother and the boy, the cousin from down the road, and we're having a very, very bad time with Janet. She's going into one of these bad turns she had. And we've been up there about an hour. And suddenly there was a knock on the front door. And I said to... I've forgotten her name now. Anyway, the niece. I said, go downstairs and open the door. I think somebody's at the front door. So she went down, opened the door. This is the conversation that ensued. What's the matter with him? What's the matter with who? What's the matter with Mr. Gross? Why didn't he open the door? She said, how can he open the door? That's a conversation I heard coming upstairs. She said, how can he open the door? He's upstairs. He's been up there for a whole hour. And there was silence. Denise, that was her name. Denise comes up the stairs, walks into the room. She's as white as a sheet. I said, Denise, what's the matter with you? She said, well, I knocked on the door and nobody answered the door. And I was going to walk away and I thought, ah, to hell with it. I'll knock on the door again. And I looked through the letterbox. And I saw what I thought was you going up the stairs. But just before that happened, the curtain was pulled aside and you looked out the window at me. So when I said, well, you saw me go up the stairs, she said, well, I just saw your legs going up, well, I presume your legs going up the stairs. So, was I seen at two places at the same time? I don't know. But it certainly wasn't me downstairs and it wasn't me walking up the stairs. Right.
We'll make that the last question and ask Tricia Robertson now to propose a vote of thanks.
Thank you, John. When Morris knew I was going to do the vote of thanks, he said, don't thank me, just send money.
So, which hasn't happened, I might tell you. Not like you to.
So if you feel like doing so, please contribute to this octogenarian. I really I don't know how many of you will realise how privileged we actually are tonight, and I mean that, and I'm not often given to gratuitous praise, as most of you know.
Pleased to hear it.
Morris is indeed, he doesn't mind me saying, an octogenarian who's made the effort to come from London this morning, up at 6:30 this morning to do so. He is one of the world's foremost psychical researchers who deals, hopefully as we do, in evidence. If it looks like an orange, tastes like an orange, and smells like an orange, then it's downright got to be an orange. And as far as the veridical evidence that Morris has regarding the information about the man in the house, it's undoubted. The evidence is actually there. And I think, I hope you realise how privileged we are, and I ask you to show your appreciation and give Morris a hearty vote of thanks from Scotland. Thank you.